Mr. McCall, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for coming in.
Nice to be here.
So everybody wants to know why you're not running. The assumption is it must be something.
You know, that fascinates me. I've been here 20 years almost, and it's been a great ride, and I've loved it. I ran a business for 20 years. 15 years into it, I said I'll sell it on the 20th year, and I did. So I think I'm just on a 20-year cycle.
So 20 years from now, we'll be talking about what you're quitting next.
Yeah, I've got three more 20-year cycles left, and I've just got to figure them out.
The strange thing, as we've talked about before, is that you endured a long time in the house where your view of the world was not the dominant view of the world, at least in the house. Mm-hmm. You had a speaker in the chair the last few sessions before Joe Strauss came in, who maybe you and he didn't see eye to eye on everything. You now have a guy who you supported as speaker. Your general view and temperamental approach to things is in place in the majority. You were chair of calendars. You're at top of the world now. But
yeah,
then you get out.
But that's when you leave. Look, we've got a guy who is doing things the right way.
Yeah.
And I'm so comfortable in leaving now. He's the right guy at the right time, and the house is in great hands. There's some mythology out there that's just a bit overblown, and that is, when I was working against Craddock, that I was in the wilderness. I had the best office in the Capitol. I had the best parking spot. All of my bills got passed. The first session he was speaker, I passed the first bill in the legislature. The first time the House had done it, the Senate always wins. Always got my bills through. There was no punishment.
So why was there a perception that somehow you were on the outs with Craddock?
Well, I was on the outs with Craddock, but he was always a gentleman to me. We had civil conversations. He had to take into account the fact that I was very publicly against him with regard to my committee assignments, and I still, because of seniority, did pretty well.
Yeah. Now, you ran for speaker briefly, not the last session, but session before.
Mm-hmm.
You have regrets? Do you walk out of the house thinking, boy, I could have been speaker. I was this close, and would have been great to do that?
I really, it's not something I think about. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things I can do something about, and that's why I ran. There were things I could do, and I did them. Mm-hmm. There is nothing I can do about the fact that I wasn't elected speaker, and it's just frankly something I don't think about.
But you thought enough of doing it to get in.
Nobody else would do it.
But not only to get in, Mr. McCall, but to get in against a guy who was perceived to be enormously powerful.
It needed to be done.
And
look,
why did it? Say so. Why did it need to be done?
Well, I wrote a letter when he was running for speaker the first time, saying what a speaker, Craddock speakership would be like. That there would be members of Congress involved in manipulating votes for the speaker. That was true. I made a whole list of what I thought a Craddock speakership would be like and why we shouldn't do it. No one else was running. Mm-hmm. Someone needed to. Mm-hmm. There were only two Republicans in the House that would stand up to Tom and talk about some of these concerns.
Right.
He's a good man, but we just differ about the operation of the House and the reverence for the rules. Mm-hmm. The only two people were Edmund Kemple and myself. And we never varied in our opposition, and we always talked about it. Incidentally, we probably knew him better than most members of the House.
Right. And what was it that that made you think that Strauss, I mean, the famous Polo Road meeting that took place a little bit more than a year ago that resulted in Strauss being speaker, Strauss didn't come up from San Antonio that day or that night thinking that he would be speaker when he left. What made you think that Strauss could be speaker of the 11 folks there?
I don't know that I agree with that. I think that Joe probably had some idea that there was a shot that he would.
Well, you know, Joe has said humbly in Joe's affect, the speaker's affect, I never thought, I never considered, it never occurred to me. You think maybe secretly he thought maybe I could be?
I think everyone in the room thought it might be them at various points.
Isn't that the nature of politics? Why be in politics if you don't think that you're the guy to do the next thing? Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, to give credibility to what you say, we got in the room and we were about to cast a vote, and Charlie Guerin said, who is going to be running for speaker? Raise your hands. Everyone raised their hand, and Joe raised his hand.
Everybody raised their hands.
No. Yeah. But Joe raised his hand.
Yeah.
That yes, he would be running for speaker.
Right.
And so I said, Joe, have you filed your paperwork with the Texas Ethics Commission? And he had not. So I said, stop everything. And called Sean Cunningham in my office, who came over and brought the paperwork for Joe to fill out, took it back to the Capitol, faxed it to the Ethics Commission, called me back and said, the paperwork is now filed. I have an okay on the fax machine that they got it. So then the meeting began again.
Right.
So Joe decided probably then he was going to run, but he probably had in his mind that he would. Mm-hmm. He obviously hadn't filed with the Ethics Commission, so he didn't know for sure.
The change has been the change that you imagined it would be, from Craddock to Strauss.
Yes. Yes.
In what ways? Describe how it manifested itself.
The process matters. Mm-hmm. Members with talent are given access. Members with ability are utilized. There is no legislating from the back bench, as they say about the courts, legislating from the bench. Well, we had people trying to legislate from the back of the room. It is truly one of the only rooms in Texas that literally has a glass ceiling. We had a figurative and literal glass ceiling for a number of years for certain people.
Mm-hmm. And Strauss has removed the ceiling.
In my opinion, yes, absolutely.
Right. Are there ways in which he falls short in your estimation? I'm asking you to criticize your friend, but heck, you're on your way out. You know, you're liberated to speak the truth. Are there ways in which you wish Strauss and his speakership were different?
You know, I would say probably just the opposite. I have been so impressed by some of the things that he's done and his instincts. I've been in crisis situations with him where everyone in the room is just all cartwheels and hand grenades on the inside, and he's calm and collected and comes up with the rational approach and the rational decision. Yeah. So probably I'm more impressed with him the more I get to know him.
Right. Let me ask you about the Democrats and in the minority, the leadership of the Democrats in the minority. The chubbing that happened at the end of the session looms large over every conversation about those folks. But the reality is it was the Democrats who joined with the ABCs to put Strauss in office, and it's the Democrats who continue to represent, for Strauss at least, a way to retain the speakership, because if someone decided to challenge the speaker from the right, he would look back to the coalition that got him elected to begin with. Do you feel that the Democrats have repaid, have been repaid, I should say, for their support of Strauss sufficiently, given enough opportunity? How would you assess the way the Democrats in the minority have behaved themselves in the Strauss era?
They certainly would find that they have better access to the process than they previously had. Mm-hmm. It's still a Republican majority, albeit a small majority, it's a Republican majority. So I can't imagine that if it were reversed, that the Democrats wouldn't assume the appropriations chair, the calendar's chair. So, you know, right. You've got to recognize the majority. And Joe's done that, but he's done it with a good balance.
Well, the chairmanships were divided up almost proportionally to the makeup of the House, right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing that was not the case previously.
And the bills set on the calendar were exactly set based on the proportion of the House, which was not true previously.
And the Speaker in the last couple of days appointed a number of House Select Committees, several of which were chaired by Democrats. That mm-hmm. shows an openness to bringing the Democrats to the leadership table, at least.
And he's using bright people. I mean, Rafael Enchia on Sunset. So it's a great move. I think he's taking into account what he needs to do. Are people always going to grumble after committee assignments? Yes.
That's a truism in politics, right?
Yeah, but the first-term speaker appoints a small number of committees, and by the second term, grows it, adds a few committees. And you can grow it that way.
Right. You talked about knowing what you wanted to do when you came into the House originally. What was that list of things that you wanted to do?
Well, it was a simple list. I didn't have any grand goals, but I had simple goals. One, I didn't want to put state official license plates on my car because I knew the night I was defeated for re-election, it would be very lonely sitting on the floor with my screwdriver of my garage taking them off. And I have no problem with elected officials having state official plates. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to show up for work every day and keep my head in the game and not miss votes. Mm-hmm. That was important.
How many votes do you estimate you missed over the years?
I was in the hospital with pneumonia one session for a couple weeks. Otherwise, I don't think I...
Slacker?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't do it. But otherwise, you've had mostly...
I've been there every day. I've not missed a day other than that,
right?
That I recall. So that was important to me. It was important to me to, in a rough and tumble world of politics, to try to be a gentleman. And with staffers, wag my tail at everybody, be kind to people. Didn't always do it, had bad days.
These are all important things, but these are all kind of about how you conduct yourself, which is no small matter. Were there issue-specific things? I want to come to the legislature and accomplish these two, three, four, five things from my district, from my voters.
No, I didn't have anything like that. I just had simple goals about behavior mm-hmm. and showing up yeah. and trying to do the best, keep my head in the game. Had no goals like that.
What is your feeling about your Republican Party as it's evolved over these years? We now find ourselves sitting here talking at a time when there is another movement, the Tea Party movement, which is attempting to attach itself to the Republican Party and move the party to the right. You have, mm-hmm. I believe, 17 House members, Republicans, incumbent Republicans with challengers, a number of U.S. congressmen, Republican incumbents with challengers. Jerry Patterson sat in this chair not long ago and said, I think the Tea Party guys are great. I don't have any problem with them. I think it's good for the party. Do you share that point of view?
I have no problem with the dialogue. I agree with a lot of the things the Tea Party people are saying. There's a lot of fear and anger in the world, particularly what's going on in Washington. I've not been impressed by the Tea Party candidates that I've seen or met because they're talking about Washington issues and running for state offices. And haven't bothered to learn the state issues and haven't bothered to be up on the offices that they're running for. So that cheapens the whole process.
But generally speaking, the idea that there might be a movement to the right of the Republican Party establishment trying to bring the party further to the right on social issues or anything else, you're okay?
Here's my problem.
Does the party need to be corrected, essentially, by being brought to the right?
The party needs to have loud dialogue. It doesn't have to have consensus. It needs to be accepting of Republicans who agree with what's going on certain amount of the time. I don't know if it's 80% or 70% or 90%. It's not 100% because that will doom the party.
You're a big tent guy.
Absolutely.
Rather than a small tent guy.
Absolutely.
Do you believe there should be any litmus testing of Republicans if, you know, here are five issues. If you don't agree with us on all five issues, we're going to run against you so that we force you to come around?
Well, here's the problem with that. A Maine Republican is very different than a New Mexico Republican, which is very different than a California Republican. And it's hard to come up with that. I would rather have a Maine Republican than to say, you don't meet the criterion, you're not a Republican.
And in fact, there are Republicans in the big cities in Texas.
That's right.
Who are different than Republicans in rural Texas.
Look, I'm from the second most educated district in Texas. The most educated district is around Rice. It's a Democratic district. The demographics in my district are almost exactly like the demographics in Nancy Pelosi's district. And yet it's a Republican district. But we look at things a bit differently in my district than they do in Pampa, which is a Republican area.
Right. And the difference manifests itself in the difference between you and Warren Chisholm.
Well, it's, you know, and Warren Chisholm and I are great friends, and right. we look at things very differently on certain issues, and we look at things very much alike on most.
Right. The National Republican Party, does it feel as it's right now operating and functioning, Michael Steele, and the way that the Senate races in which the establishment candidates are being challenged to the right, Florida is one I think about with Marco Rubio challenging Chris. Does this party feel like your party?
Well, I'm a moderate, and
you don't see that word as a pejorative.
I've always defined myself that way. I've done it in literature. Most of the people in my district probably would define themselves that way. Yeah. No, I don't.
So the party nationally feels like a good party for you or a less good party?
I don't know that any member of the Texas House goes to the Republican convention and feels comfortable there. I don't know that any member of the Texas House is a Democrat, goes to the Democratic convention and feels comfortable there.
Texas is just different in how it views these things.
And the party activists are different than the elected officials.
Right.
And we don't typically elect party officials who have this staunch,
right.
it's my way or the highway view. And if we do elect someone with a my way or the highway view, they don't pass a bill in Austin in the Capitol.
Of course, the chair of the Republican Party of Texas is a former party activist right now.
Mm-hmm.
That okay with you?
She's the only lobbyist I ever asked to leave my office in 18 years.
I'll take that as a no. That's how that goes. Do you ever think about switching parties? Was there ever a moment in which being a moderate for you meant being so far out of the mainstream of your party that you thought, maybe I'd better throw in with the other guys?
No, absolutely not. I'm a Republican, and I'm a businessman, and I'm a fiscal conservative. And I wrote in past one of the biggest state tax cut bills in the history of the United States. And so I'm a Republican. I'm clearly a Republican. I'm a Republican.
Let me ask you about two Republicans running against each other, Rick Perry and Kay Bailey Hutchison. You know both of them well. Mm-hmm. You've worked with them well. Are you staying out of that race?
I am, yes. Senator Hutchison gave the eulogy at my dad's funeral. She's been a close personal friend for years. I worked in her congressional race in the early 80s. Rick Perry has been phenomenal to me through the years and is a friend. And I've let both of them know I'm just staying out of it.
Do you begrudge her the right to challenge him? In other words, the theory is that if you have a Republican incumbent, for somebody to run against that Republican incumbent, another Republican office holder, there has to be a reason to fire that first person. There are some people on the Perry camp, Perry side of things, in the Perry camp, who believe that it's gauche of her to be running. It's going to cost $40 million to conduct this race for what? What's your view of that?
Well, Ronald Reagan ran against Gerald Ford, and the party lived and survived and then later thrived. And so I'm not going to speculate on that or their reasons for doing what they're doing. My prediction is that the Republican Party ultimately will be stronger and will be fine and we'll get through it no matter who wins, and we'll keep building.
So, and whoever comes out of the primary will be the ultimate victor in the fall against
Bill
White, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's a Republican state still.
Right. What are you going to do next? There's a rumor in Austin, which likes rumors, that you might be the next chancellor of Texas State and that system. You want to comment about that?
You know, that's unfortunate because the committee hasn't met, mm-hmm. paperwork hasn't been put in, and so if that rumor is out there, it probably greatly diminishes my chances for that occurring.
Well, you assume that the rumor is an sort of ill-wishing rumor as opposed to people thinking that you might be a good fit and maybe wishing well for you.
Well, I don't know, but it's something that I'm interested in. I'm talking to a lot of people about a lot of things and looking forward to the next chapter.
Done in politics?
I think so. I'm not throwing the Rolodex away, and if it should work that I'm associated with the university, I think that that will be helpful.
Doesn't foreclose on going back on the other side of the fence one day.
I don't envision that happening, but who knows?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Is there any one thing as you leave office that you wish had gone differently over all the years you were in the House? If you could go back and take one thing back or make one thing happen that didn't, what would it be?
Of course, there were times when I voted yes when I wish I voted no, and there are times I voted no when I should have voted yes. If those things happen. Yeah. There are times when I got up to speak that I wish I'd stayed in my chair.
Yeah.
But probably the thing I regret most are those few times when I sat in my chair when I should have gotten up to speak.
Give me an example of a time.
Those things haunt me.
Can you think of one time when that was the case?
I can, but I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
That's one thing I would tell members. You know, there's this theory that freshmen should just be seen and not heard. I've never agreed with that, and I've always encouraged freshmen, if they feel passionately about something, the stupidest thing they can do is sit in their chair, and they will regret it if they do. And I've regretted a few times I didn't stand up forcefully and speak on issues I should have.
All right. Okay. Mr. McCall, thank you very much.
Good to be with you, Evan. Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Thank you.
You know anybody at Texas State?
I know a lot of people.